From Pacifica Radio, broadcasting from Washington, D.C., this is Democracy Now!
There is a war going on. It's not the one we see on TV every day. It's a war on women.
In what could be the largest Washington demonstration in U.S. history, over a million people descend on the nation's capital to oppose Bush administration policies on women's reproductive rights. We'll hear speeches from activists and celebrities and a close encounter with Howard Dean on women's rights, elections, and Israel's assassination of Palestinian leaders.
Here's where I am on Israel. I do support this dance on the assassination of Hamas leaders. They're terrorists and they want to kill people and blow up children.
All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, the War and Peace Report, broadcasting today from the nation's capital, Washington, D.C. I'm Amy Goodman. Here yesterday, a million women and their supporters demonstrated for women's reproductive rights. Organizers put the crowd size at 1.15 million, which would make it the largest demonstration in Washington in U.S. history. We'll have more on the historic rally for the rest of the program, but now more headlines. In Iraq, intense fighting continued over the weekend. Scores of Iraqis were killed, including four school children in Baghdad. The U.S. delayed plans to launch another heavy attack on Fallujah, but an invasion of the holy city of Najaf appears imminent. Suicide boat bombers killed three U.S. soldiers and disrupted the flow of oil from southern Iraq. And the three more nations in the U.S.-led coalition hint they will soon pull out of Iraq. In Najaf, a U.S. general warned Sunday U.S. troops will soon be sent into the Shiite holy city to crush the cleric Muqtada al-Sadr. In Najaf, a general warned Sunday U.S. troops will soon be sent into the Shiite holy city. Brigadier General Mark Hertling said, quote, "We're going to drive this guy Sadr into the dirt. Either he tells his militia to put down their arms, form a political party, and fight with ideas, not guns, or he's going to find a lot of them killed." The U.S. has vowed that if they enter Najaf, they will avoid attacking sacred sites. But the head of the U.S. occupation, Paul Bremer, accused Sadr of stockpiling heavy weaponry in mosques and schools in Najaf. The U.N. envoy to Iraq, Lakhdar Brahimi, warned against going into Najaf. He said, quote, "Sending the tanks hauling into a place like this is not the right thing to do. And I think the Americans know that extremely well now," he said. Meanwhile, the U.S. announced on Sunday it would hold off waging another large offensive against the Sunni city of Fallujah. Late last week, a senior U.S. official warned that U.S. was going to turn Fallujah into a killing field in a couple of days. Instead, the U.S. announced it would conduct joint patrols with the U.S.-trained Iraq Civil Defense Corps. But one captain in the Iraqi force warned the joint patrols will not likely work. He told the Boston Globe, quote, "If people see us walking with the Marines, the Mujahideen will do one of two things. Either they will wait for us at our homes and shoot us, or they will shoot us when we're with the Marines. We want the Marines to leave and let us take care of the city." Iraq's two main offshore oil terminals in the Persian Gulf were nearly blown up Saturday by suicide boat bombers in an attack reminiscent of the USS Cole. Three U.S. soldiers were killed when they attempted to thwart the attack. The bombing shut down one oil platform for 2 days, leading to the loss of $110 million in revenue. The Guardian of London reported it was the most serious attack on the Iraqi oil industry to date and marked the first time the Iraqi resistance used suicide boat bombers. In Baghdad, U.S. forces shot dead four Iraqi children. According to eyewitnesses, a U.S. Humvee came under attack, prompting the U.S. troops to start shooting randomly. Four children, all age 12, were hit and killed. In Karbala, the motorcade of the visiting Bulgarian president came under fire on Sunday. No one was reported injured. Al Jazeera is reporting at least 40 Iraqis died on Saturday and another 10 on Sunday in separate incidents across the country. One U.S. helicopter strike killed up to 25 Iraqis in an attack south of Fallujah. The Washington Post reports that Iraqi National Congress leader Ahmed Chalabi may have no role in the Iraqi government after June 30th, when the U.S. hands over some power to a new, still-to-be-determined Iraqi government. Chalabi, a former Iraqi exile, has close ties to the CIA, the Pentagon, and Vice President Dick Cheney, but has never built a popular base in Iraq. Meanwhile, the Knight Ridder news agency is reporting that Chalabi's Iraqi National Congress may have broken U.S. law by using taxpayer funds to lobby for the U.S. to invade Iraq and overthrow Saddam Hussein. The General Accounting Office of Congress has launched a probe to determine if U.S. taxpayers essentially paid to have themselves persuaded it was necessary to invade Iraq. Between 1998 and 2003, the U.S. gave the INC at least $18 million. Secretary of State Colin Powell has acknowledged that Norway, the Netherlands, and El Salvador will likely pull their troops from Iraq on June 30th. Earlier this month, Spain, Honduras, and the Dominican Republic announced they would pull out their troops. Meanwhile, the BBC is reporting Britain is now considering sending 2,000 more soldiers to Iraq, in part to make up for the 1,300 that have been pulled out by Spain. Britain currently has 7,500 troops in Iraq, near roughly 17 times fewer troops than the United States. Meanwhile, in Washington, Senator Joseph Biden of Delaware, the ranking Democrat on the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, said on Sunday the U.S. needs to send 20 to 60,000 more troops to Iraq. The Associated Press has found that Saudi Arabia secretly played a major role in the U.S. invasion of Iraq. The U.S. essentially managed the Arab campaign against Iraq from Saudi Arabia, where the U.S. used at least three air bases. Thousands of U.S. special forces staged attacks from Saudi Arabia. And the Saudis provided tens of millions of dollars in cheap fuel for the U.S. forces. Saudi Arabia's role in the war has been kept secret, in part because the war was widely opposed by the general Saudi population. The U.S. military presence in Saudi Arabia after the first Gulf War has been cited by Osama bin Laden as a key reason why he began to wage jihad against the United States. A new poll by the University of Maryland has found that 45% of Americans still believe Saddam Hussein had weapons of mass destruction before the invasion of Iraq, and 57% believe Saddam Hussein gave substantial support to al-Qaeda. In Denmark, the country's defense minister resigned on Friday after lawmakers questioned whether the military intelligence agency had provided accurate reports on whether Saddam had weapons of mass destruction. And in the West Bank, Israeli forces killed at least 8 Palestinians over the weekend, bringing the Palestinian death toll to 30 since Israel assassinated Hamas leader Abdelaziz Rantisi a week ago Saturday. On Sunday, an Israeli border policeman was killed and 3 others were wounded. The Palestinian group Al-Aqsa Martyrs Brigade said it carried out the attack to avenge the assassination of Rantisi. Al-Zahar replaces Rantisi as Hamas leader. The Israeli newspaper Haaretz is reporting Palestinian surgeon Dr. Mahmoud Al-Zahar is the man Hamas has secretly appointed to take over the group following the assassination of Rantisi. Hamas has not publicly named Rantisi's successor, fearing he will become a target for assassination. Rantisi took over Hamas in March following the assassination of Sheikh Ahmed Yassin. Al-Zahar is based in Gaza and is one of the remaining founders of Hamas. He is seen as one of the movement's ideological leaders and has been targeted by Israel before. In September, Israeli F-16s bombed his home, killing his son and bodyguard. The Scripps Howard News Service has found that at least 1.6 million voters went to the polls during the 2000 elections here in the United States only to cast a ballot for president that was not registered. Florida's problems drew the most attention, where 178,000 ballots were not counted. But Scripps Howard found seven other states had a higher count, a higher percentage of uncounted ballots. They were Georgia, Idaho, Illinois, New Jersey, South Carolina, and Wyoming. On Friday, President Bush lifted most trade sanctions on Libya, opening the doors for U.S. oil companies to begin working in Libya for the first time in 18 years. The Wall Street Journal reports ConocoPhillips, Hess, and Marathon Oil have all begun taking initial steps to get back into Libya. In Washington, the Bush administration will appear in court today in an attempt to block FBI whistleblower Sybil Edmonds from testifying in a lawsuit filed by relatives and survivors of September 11th victims. Edmonds was hired after September 11th by the FBI to translate pre-9/11 intelligence gathered by the agency. She has publicly said on Democracy Now! And other media outlets that the U.S. had considerable evidence that al-Qaeda was planning to strike the United States with airplanes. The Justice Department is expected to cite laws regarding state secrets in order to gag the Turkish-American translator. The Bush administration claims her evidence, quote, would cause serious damage to the national security and foreign policy interests of the United States.
For children to be safe, they must be wanted. For women to be whole, we must be free. There are women put in prisons, prisons put in women, but our history need not be our destiny, and we won't back up. Won't bow down. We're planted by the water like that tree, and ever moving like the water. So will we march for women's lives, for women to be free. When will we be safe in our own bodies, free to give birth when and if we choose, free to have our children or abortion when needed.
Judy Gorman singing March for Women's Lives in our studio in New York before she headed down to Washington and debuted it for what is believed to be one of the largest protests in U.S. history. Over 1 million women and their supporters gathered on the Mall between the Washington Monument and the Capitol yesterday, protesting the Bush administration policies on women's health issues. Organizers for the march put it at 1.15 million people. Protesters wearing pink and purple shirts covered the mall from the base of the Capitol Hill, a mile back, to the base of the Washington Monument, raising signs reading, "Fight the radical right, keep abortion legal, and U.S. out of my uterus." Celebrities, from entertainers to politicians to activists, took to two stages and addressed the throng. Actor Cybill Shepherd, Whoopi Goldberg, Ashley Judd attended, as did singers Ani DiFranco and Moby, as well as the Indigo Girls and Betty. Feminist icons Patricia Ireland and Gloria Steinem were there, as well as labor rights activist Dolores Huerta. The former Secretary of State Madeleine Albright also spoke, as well as California Senator Barbara Boxer. The issue of abortion was the centerpiece of the march against Bush's policies, including a stance on funding international family planning. No U.S. funds may be used for any family planning agency that mentions abortion to patients. Shortly after taking office in 2001, President Bush barred the government from funding international organizations that use money from other sources to provide abortion or information about terminating a pregnancy. Bush also signed a ban on what critics call the partial birth abortion, what doctors call late-term abortions, and the first federal law to endow a fetus with legal rights distinct from the pregnant woman. The Bush administration also has not made it possible to obtain the morning after pill, also known as emergency contraception, without a prescription. Bush stayed at Camp David in the Maryland mountains until late afternoon when he returned to the Capitol. His spokesperson, Taylor Gross, said, quote, "The president believes we should work to build a culture of life in America." Today, we're going to hear the words of some of those who took to the stage on Sunday. We begin with actor Whoopi Goldberg.
I'm told this is officially the largest women's march in history. In history, nobody expected this. I'm sure Mr. Bush didn't expect this, child. Welcome to the March for Women's Lives. I'm looking out at y'all and I can see as far as the eye will carry. It's amazing. And I don't need to tell you this, but we need to let everybody know in all of these government buildings that we marched in front of, that we are here and we are not kidding. We are not kidding, y'all. Time is of the essence. This is what America looks like. Look at your neighbor next to you, standing next to you. That is America. We represent women from all over the country, all over the world, and we are not playing. They've gone too far, and we're pulling them back. Now, who was here in 1989? I was. Who was here in 1992? I was. With a lot of y'all. And now we've come back. Some of us have brought our children, our grandchildren, children we're thinking about having. They're all here. And we're gonna keep coming back again and again and again until they get it. This is no joke. This is still America. This is not a fundamentalist country. The separation of church and state must be maintained. We need to help stop the attacks on women's reproductive rights in the name of religion. Not only here at home, but all over the world. Does anybody remember this? You remember what this was used for? There's a whole generation out there standing with us who don't know what this is for. A couple of people said to me, "Why are you carrying a hanger?" I said, because this is what life was like before choice. This was the choice. This was it. And I'm here to tell you, never again. We are not going backwards, child. Never again. Never again. You understand me, young women under 30? This is what we used. Never again. Never again. Never again. Never again. Never again. Never again. Never again will this be the choice of any woman in our hemisphere, in our world. Never again. There is a war going on. It's not the one we see on TV every day. It's a war on women. Access to family planning, sex education, abortion. It's been attacked and restricted. Explain to me how, if you do not have family planning, you can bitch about abortion. Explain that to me. If you're not going to help people get the information they need, back up. Back up. They're talking about the loss of Roe v. Wade. The Supreme Court is split 5-4 on the issue. For now, we got 5 votes, and the anti-choice people, they got 4. But we can all count 1 vote protecting the freedoms we fought for. It's not enough. We are 1 vote away from going back to this. You understand? 1 vote away. It's not even an option. We're not going back. It's not going to happen. The government continues to slash and destroy critical family planning, safe delivery, prenatal care, AIDS, HIV prevention funding here and around the world. We've seen critical life-saving dollars diverted so that abstinence-only programs can exist. Excuse me. Excuse me. That cannot be the only choice. Everybody makes a mistake. We've seen the gag rule. The global gag rule reinstated. We cannot let it happen. At this time in history, when our country has the power to alleviate suffering around the world, we have the medical science to help alleviate suffering around the world. Here we are trying to increase it. Women are dying around the world from illegal abortions. We stand here, we're marching. But let me explain something to you. As we stand, 1 woman is dying every 6 minutes. Now let's do the math. Since we left at 10 a.m. thereabouts, over 30 women have died needlessly. Today alone, 30 women are dead because they got pregnant in the wrong country. That's why we're here. The struggle has to go on until every woman in every country in the world has the right to control her life. If we can stand together in a way that this nation has never seen before, we can turn the tide. We can turn the tide. We need to get everybody out. We need to register people to vote. We need to explain to them what the issue really is. It's okay to have your opinion, but you must keep choice. Even God gave your freedom a choice. And what God has given you, let no man tear asunder, child. God gave us freedom of choice. They say that's what elevates us above the animals. Well, let's exercise that choice. Let's make the right choice, put the right person in office this time. Quit fooling around. Never again, y'all. Say it again, never again. Never again. Never again, let them hear it. Never again. Never again. We are not going backwards. We are going forward. Thank you for being here today. Now, 7 leading national women's rights groups have come together to organize this event. The American I got so excited with Never Again, my lips failed. 7 leading national women's rights groups have come together to organize this historic event. The American Civil Liberties Union, the Black Woman's Health Imperative, the Feminist Majority, NARA Pro-Choice America, the National Latina Institute for Reproductive Health, the National Organization for Women, and Planned Parenthood Federation of America. And these 7 groups are joined today by over 1,400 co-sponsoring international, national, state, and local organizations. This is an amazing alliance and a true force to be reckoned with. These are our people. You are our people. Never again. Never again.
Whoopi Goldberg addressing what could be more than a million people in Washington, D.C., in what might be the largest demonstration in U.S. history here in the Capitol. This is Democracy Now! We'll be back with more of the speakers in a minute.
My favorite sign today was the one that just said, "Trust women." I thought that just said it all. State trooper thinks I drive too fast, pull me over to tell me so. I say out here on the prairie, any speed is too slow. I miss Brooklyn, I miss my crew, let's start over, I miss my cue. Guess I forgot who I was talking to. Should've recognized that fierce look in his eye. I've seen it in my mirror so many times. He's gonna put his 2 cents in, cause he's got a gun. But I'm gonna put in 3, cause history owes me 1. So I came out here to see some stuff for myself. I mean, why leave the telling up to everybody else? This may be God's country, but this is our country too. Yeah, move over, Mr. Holiness, let the little people through.
Ani DeFranco taking the stage yesterday at the March for Women's Lives. This is Democracy Now!, the War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. As we go now to country singer Ashley Judd, who took the stage and addressed the crowd.
Keep your laws off my body. Can you hear me? 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue. Say it with me so they can hear us. Keep your laws off my body. Say it to Congress. Keep your laws off my body. The average woman needs 3 decades of birth control, or she will have 12 to 15 pregnancies in her lifetime. You don't want us to have to abort those pregnancies? Have health insurance cover our birth control. Our workplace, our culture, our rights, our freedom. There are brave women, visionaries, and warriors who not only protected the flame of women's activists during times, including this time, hostile to our fundamental rights, but who really set this country on fire. Most of you have known about them for years, but for the swelling ranks of young activists participating in your first political rally, we are honored to introduce you to 3 of those women who have carried the torch for decades, and invite you to learn more about them so you may go home and sing their names. In 1966, after years of grassroots work, this veteran activist negotiated the very first contract between farm workers and agricultural companies in the United States. One of many she negotiated to secure protections, rights, and health care benefits for millions of families. Even more than the dozens of awards that she's received, more than being named one of the 100 most influential women of the 20th century, this grandmother rocks for literally putting herself on the front lines, having been arrested 22 times for nonviolent union activities. Si se puede, si se puede. Yes, it can be done. the rally cry of farm workers and union activists everywhere, started by Cesar Chavez and the co-founder and vice president emeritus of the United Farm Workers of America. Welcome, Dolores Huerta.
Thank you, Ashley. We have made history today. We have made history today. CNN says this is the largest march ever. Y buenos días a todos. Today we are marching for the lives of all women, but I want to let you know that Latina women are some of the most women that have been deprived of their rights to have a legal abortion. So today you are also marching for them, because we know that as feminists, sister feminists, and brother feminists, we know that our job is a big one. Not only do we have to fight for ourselves, for our daughters, for our granddaughters, for our neighbors, we also have to fight for immigrant women, for working women, for those women that are being killed in Juarez, Mexico, the women that work in the sweatshops. These are part of our burden. But you know, we have the power. We are showing it here today, because today this march has been a call to action, a call to action for all of us. And let me share this phrase with you. In the Farm Workers Union, we have a phrase that says, every worker is an organizer. Today, I want to say, we as feminists, every feminist is an organizer. We have a responsibility to carry the message of choice, not just to our friends, but to those who do not understand. We have to hand carry that message to make sure that they understand that women have a right to their own bodies, that women have a right to their own lives. And remember, we have a very important election coming up in November. Listen, the most important day of your life is not your birthday. The most important day of your life is election day. So we have to harness the power that we have here today, the energy that we have here today. We have got to take this energy not only to our homes, but to our neighborhoods and to our communities, and make sure that every single person is registered to vote, and that every single person gets out to vote, absentee ballot, because we have to win, and we can do it. We like to say in the farm workers, we can do it, si se puede. But first, let's say a great big old viva, a great big old viva for choice. I will say it first. This means long live choice. I will say viva choice. All of you shout a great big old farm worker viva. Que viva choice! Let's do it louder. Que viva choice. Que viva la mujer. Okay. Que viva la justicia. Okay, all of us together with an organized hand clap. Can we win? Can we take our country back? Can we make choice the law of the land? We say, yes, we can. Si se puede.
Labor leader Dolores Huerta, introduced by actor Ashley Judd at the March for Women's Lives yesterday. Also, before the main stage went live, we had a chance to catch up with former Democratic presidential candidate Howard Dean. Pacifica Radio was broadcasting the historic march. Vern Avery Brown and I questioned him about a number of issues, including the situation in Iraq.
I think that this president had no idea what he was getting into when he did this. I think that if I were president today, I would actually agree. I would not send more American troops, but I think that I would send international troops because I would try to rekindle the relationships that George Bush destroyed with our allies. Ultimately, now that we're there and we've done all these things to Iraqis, we ought to try to leave Iraq as close to a democratic society as we possibly can. I do believe it's irresponsible just to pull out the troops. First of all, it's irresponsible from a position of national security because either Al-Qaeda, which is there now, although it wasn't before we were there, Al-Qaeda is a danger. I think a fundamentalist theocracy in Iraq certainly isn't going to do anything for women's rights. And I think the right thing to do is to try to have a democratic constitution with women's rights protected as much as possible. So the right thing to do is to turn this over to the United Nations as soon as possible, stop this from being an American occupation, have this be an international reconstruction. And I think John Kerry, as president, will be able to do that. We disagree on sending troops, but American troops. But in the long run, again, I think of the differences between the two, and I think we're much less likely to have a headstrong foreign policy based on ideology under President Kerry than we are under President Bush.
You talked about your differences with John Kerry right now. Can you enumerate what some of them are?
Well, no, I think you've already done a very good job enumerating what they all are. Let's talk about the similarities for a minute. His health care plan is almost exactly like mine. We cover every single person with a plan that we think can pass Congress. It would be paid for by eliminating the tax cuts on all those people that George Bush gave tax cuts to who don't need them. His environmental plan, John Kerry has always been an excellent environmentalist. He's a strong supporter of renewable energy. Cut off the flow of oil money to the Middle East, which I think would be a very positive thing. I think his position on women's rights is extraordinary. George Bush's is dreadful. So there are a lot of things we have in common. And again, I'm vigorously supporting him. Sure, we don't agree on everything. Sure, I wish I'd won, but I didn't. And in a democracy, you got to pick between two people. One of two people is going to be president of the United States after next January. It's going to be John Kerry or George Bush.
Any possibility that you'd be considered for the number two slot, the vice presidential slot, with on a Kerry ticket?
Well, actually, you have to ask John Kerry. I have no say over that one. I'll do whatever I can to help the Democratic Party.
And the concern that...
help send George Bush back to Crawford, Texas.
The concern people have that... And that is this. John Kerry taking positions now when he was on Tim Russert's Meet the Press, where he was asking him continually, do you disagree with Bush? And, for example, the issue of the assassination of the Hamas leader. And he said, no, he supported Bush and his support for Sharon, questioning about the right to return and other issues in Israel, talking about sending in more troops. Many people feel Al Gore lost, aside from having the election stolen from him, because he started to take the progressive base for granted and was looking too much like Bush at the time. Do you see that could possibly happen with John Kerry right now, that people will feel increasingly they may not feel they have someone else to go to, but that they're not galvanized to get out there?
There's no question. My whole philosophy during the campaign is you've got to galvanize your base. This is not going to be an election that's won in the middle. This is going to be an election that's won at the base level by getting people out to vote and making them enthusiastic, giving them a really good reason to vote. My whole theory of this election has always been to look at what Karl Rove did and Ralph Reed did in the last two elections. Energize your base. You've got to do that. You've got to get them out. You've got to give them a reason to vote.
And do you think that's happening now when you tell people not to vote for Nader and yet you see the direction that Kerry is going in on these issues? For example, do you support his stance supporting the assassination of John Tisi?
Here's where I am on Israel. I do support this stance on the assassination of Hamas leaders. They're terrorists, and they want to kill people and blow up children. I do not support Sharon's stance on taking over what is Palestinian territory. I think that's a mistake, and it's not going to make Israel safer. So there's some differences that I have with both John Kerry and President Bush on that issue. But again, you've got to look at the whole picture. There's no question that John Kerry will make a much, much better president than George Bush, and I got to go.
Thanks.
Does assassinating leaders make the world safer? England condemned it, France condemned it, Germany condemned it, Japan condemned it.
I disagree with you folks on this one. Those people are trying to kill women and children. I think people who kill women and children are wrong, whether they're Arabs, whether they're Jews, or whether they're Americans. We shouldn't be doing it.
Would you put Sharon in that category?
And that was Howard Dean getting up from the Pacifica radio table. This is Democracy Now! When we come back, the presidents of the major organizations sponsoring the March for Women's Lives. Stay with us.
And the mighty multinationals have monopolized the oxygen, so it's as easy as breathing for us all to participate. Shares of air, and you know it's all around you, but it's hard to point and say there, so you just sit on your hands and quietly contemplate your next bold move, the next thing you're gonna need to prove to yourself.
Ani DeFranco singing at the March for Women's Lives on Sunday in Washington, D.C. This is Democracy Now! I'm Amy Goodman, broadcasting from Washington, D.C. The heads of the major organizations that sponsored the march, Feminist Majority, NARAL Pro-Choice America, American Civil Liberties Union, Black Women's Health Imperative, National Latina Institute for Reproductive Health, NOW, and Planned Parenthood Federation of America. We begin with Anthony Romero of the American Civil Liberties Union.
The ACLU. I am proud to join our sisters and brothers today in speaking for women's rights and reproductive choice. The government does not belong in our bedrooms. It does not belong in our doctor's offices. It does not belong snooping into the bank accounts of innocent Americans. It should not have the power to monitor your bookstore purchases or know what books you check out of your libraries. Our fundamental right to privacy is under assault, and it stands on us, the men and women of this country, to send a strong message to Democrats and Republicans alike that this assault on our privacy, on our civil liberties, on our civil rights must stop now. The right to reproductive freedom is more than the right to a safe and legal abortion. It is the right to adequate reproductive health services. It is the right to have access to sexuality education. It is the right to have access to prenatal care. Those are the issues that we march for today, men and women all across this country. My grandmother, when she came from Puerto Rico, she gave me this one saying that she reminded me of. She would say, "Dime con quién andas y te diré quién eres." Tell me who you walk with, and I'll tell you who you are. Well, my friends, today we walk with a multitude of Americans who are sending a very strong and loud message about the importance of safeguarding women's reproductive health. And when you go back to Hawaii, when you go back to Alabama, when you go back to the Carolinas, send a very strong message to your colleagues and your co-workers and your friends and your neighbors. Tell them that if you believe that every woman has a right to reproductive health services, walk with us. If you believe that every American man and woman has a right to reproductive sexuality education, walk with us. If you believe that the right to choice is a basic human right, that no politician must ever take away with the sweep of his pen. Walk with us, march with us, fight with us, and keep on fighting. Thank you very much, my friends.
President of the Black Women's Health Imperative, please welcome Lorraine Cole.
About 150 years ago, an ex-slave named Sojourner Truth stood before a gathering on women's rights very much like this one. She spoke about the indignity she faced as a black woman. She even talked about the social injustices she endured against her reproductive rights, having 13 children and having seen them sold into slavery. Throughout her speech, she repeatedly asked a very simple yet profound question: ain't I a woman? Fast forward 150 years to today. Sojourner Truth is still waiting for this nation to answer her question. The reproductive health of black women is in a state of crisis. Black women are suffering and dying too often, too soon, and needlessly. This crisis spans a broad range of issues: maternal mortality, infant mortality, HIV/AIDS, access to health care, and policies that interfere with reproductive decision-making, and many, many more. In the area of maternal mortality, black women die from pregnancy-related causes more than any other group of women. When it comes to AIDS, there are 20 black women with the disease for every one white woman, and it's even more astronomical in Africa. On the issue of access to health care, one out of every three black women has no health care insurance and has limited access to reproductive health care services. And most of these are working women who are in low-paying jobs and can't afford insurance. Black women have a very high stake in the systematic threats against privacy and reproductive decision making. If lost, black women will bear the greatest burdens of a return to back alley practices. When it comes to family planning, women on welfare are essentially being told by the government not to have any more children with family caps on welfare. When it comes to infant mortality, babies born to black women die at rates as high as in third world countries. All these numbers have names and faces. They represent women's lives. Just like Sojourner Truth more than 150 years ago, we have sojourned here today to speak the truth. The time is now to finally answer Sojourner Truth's question, "Ain't I a woman?" with a resounding yes. When we leave here today, let's turn promise into partnerships. Let's turn partnerships into power. Thank you.
The next of our co-organizers, the National Latina Institute for Reproductive Health, welcome Executive Director Sylvia Henriquez.
This is amazing. To my Latina sisters, we are emerging as a vibrant civic and political force. We are a critically important constituency, and we will not be ignored or silenced. We are here today to ensure that no Latina will live in a climate of fear and oppression, or without basic access to comprehensive and affordable health care. And we are here so that our daughters and ourselves and our granddaughters can be empowered to make decisions about our futures, our bodies, and our lives. That is what reproductive justice is. That is why we are here today. We have been mobilizing, activating, and organizing communities to ensure that our voices are loud, unified, and that together we continue to build a diverse Latina movement. We demand an end to coercive and punitive policies that undermine our ability to make healthy, informed decisions about our health, our lives, and our futures. The time is now. Our lives are at stake. Look at all the people that have arrived. Mujeres, this is only the beginning. We are demanding salud, dignidad, y justicia. We are organizing for the future of women's reproductive health and Latina women's lives. Hoy es el comienzo de un cambio nacional y a nivel local, como mujeres, seguiremos luchando. Estamos aquí juntas. Estamos luchando para el futuro de nuestras vidas, para poder vivir en un país con dignidad, vivir saludables, y con el derecho de poder decidir nuestro destino. Gracias.
The president of Planned Parenthood Federation of America, please welcome Gloria Felt.
Good afternoon. Good afternoon. Thank you for your energy. Thank you for standing for women's lives. The power of your voices today is absolutely incredible. So I want you to help me out here. Let's tell John Ashcroft to take his long right-wing arms off our medical privacy. Hey, Mr. Ashcroft, we are patriots, and we are going to act. Let me hear it. Come on, let me hear it. Make no mistake, there is a war on choice, and we are going to win it. They're not just after abortion rights. This is a full-throttle war on your very health, your access to real sex education, birth control, medical privacy, and life-saving research. They are coming after you. They are coming after your schools. They are coming after your neighborhood pharmacy. They are even coming after your Girl Scout cookies. But there's one thing they don't know. They are going to lose. We are going to win. We're going to win because of the power of your voices. And I want to tell you something. Tomorrow is even more important than today, because we must do more than just fight back. We must fight forward. We must fight forward, not just to protect our freedoms, but to advance access. Not just to save our choices, but to increase them. Fight forward for what you want, for your agenda. I want you to leave here with a personal plan of action that you promise me you will take. If you're not registered to vote, that's your first assignment, and I want you to take 5 friends with you. But don't stop at voting. That's just the start. Engage at every level of the debate. Join a pro-choice group. Wear your pro-choice shirt proudly everywhere. Talk to your school board. Go to candidate forums and ask questions. Urge your legislators to pass the Freedom of Choice Act now. This is your country. But why wait till tomorrow to use the power of your voice? Get your cell phone out right now. Pull out your cell phone. Call somebody back home. Tell them to march with you virtually today. and tomorrow and tomorrow and tomorrow. Come on, get those cell phones out. I want to see you multiplying the million people who are here today. Tell everybody to stand up for women's lives. Stand up for women's lives. Stand up for women's choices. Make your voices heard every day, and we will win this war on choice. Thank you. Thank you. Call.
Fellow march organizer, from NOW, the National Organization of Women, please welcome Kim Gandy.
Good afternoon. You look beautiful. You're all the way back to the Washington Monument. Take a look. Now, you've just heard from speaker after speaker. What's wrong? And the question is, are you going to do something about it? They can't hear you at the Capitol. They need to hear you at the Supreme Court. Now they need to hear you at the White House. We are going to take the passion and energy of this march, and we are going to take it home. Today, you are galvanizing a new movement for action. And the other speakers here will tell you what we're marching for and the policies that we're marching against. But I want to talk about what's in many of our on our minds and in our hearts, and that is our daughters. I have my daughter here, Elizabeth Cady, and I'm here for her and for all of your daughters.
The presidents of the organizations that sponsored the March for Women's Lives here in Washington, D.C. on Sunday. The organizers say more than a million people attended, making it one of the largest, if not the largest, march in U.S. history. And that does it for today's program. If you'd like to get a copy, you can go to our website at democracynow.org. I'm looking forward to seeing people here in Washington, D.C. for a big WPFW fundraiser on our Exception to the Rulers tour. That is Wednesday night at 7 o'clock at UDC Auditorium. You can call WPFW for tickets or get them at the door. Also a reception at Mimi's before. Well, a lot of people to thank on this incredible day that took place yesterday. We did a Pacifica radio broadcast with Verna Avery Brown and Amelia Gonzalez and the whole team there, and especially Democracy Now!'s team today for broadcasting this two-city broadcast. Democracy Now! Is produced by Mike Burke, Sharif Abdel Kadous, Anna Noguera, Elizabeth Press, John Hamilton, Jeremy Scahill. Uri Galed is our director. Also, Flip Mike DeFilippo is our engineer. Again, our website is democracynow.org. Special thanks to Dennis Moynihan and Chuck Skurich. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks for joining us for another edition of Democracy Now!
My favorite sign today was the one that just said, "Trust women." I thought that just said it all. State trooper thinks that draft...